Narration again. BBC News.
And the news is presented by Tom Sanders.
Dear BBC, when, oh when, will you stop providing a platform to puppets?
There's someone or something new coming to Saturday nights.
Hi, I'm Randy Feldface, a purple puppet from Australia who somehow managed to get a show on Radio 4.
If you've never seen me before, Google satanic spawn of Barney the dinosaur and you'll get the general idea.
He's made entirely of felt, and he wants to destroy the world.
The point is, the planet is getting hotter. We're on track for mass extinction, and I want to see it happen.
Randy Feltface's Destruction Manual
begins this Saturday night at 11 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, we join Victoria Corran-Mitchell for Heresy. Today, the panel discuss Save the Dates and the pros and cons of being on a committee.
Hello and welcome to Heresy, the show that fights against received wisdom and blows a raspberry in the face of cancel culture. It's a blessedly uncensored corner of the BBC where I would be fully free to assert, for example, that Prince Andrew, the Duke of York... while dressed as Meghan Markle. Joining me tonight, journalist Matthew Norman and the comedians Richard Herring and Phil Wang. These are dangerous days to demonstrate flexible thinking, which is what Heresy is all about, of course. Phil, has anyone ever tried to cancel you?
Recently, yeah, just the other day, people have been trying to cancel me on Twitter because on a podcast I revealed that I have in my bathrooms a mat for the toilet, which I did not know was controversial. But it's a mat for the toilet, not your garden variety square rectangular mat. It's a mat, but it's got like a U sort of indentation. Yes, here we are. There's some nods of acknowledgement there. A U of indentation to make room for the shape of the toilet. Now, I thought this was part of being an adult, was you got a little toilet mat. Turns out people think it's disgusting. Well, someone on Twitter described them as piss bibs. Which... So I might not have a career after this show tonight because I stand by my decision to have a toilet mat.
How about you, Richard? Have you been a cancel victim?
Amazingly, I haven't been cancelled. I'd quite like to be because it seems to be a great boost for comedians' careers when they are cancelled. They get more work than you've ever seen. Netflix specials about how they've been cancelled. I could do with all of that. I've grown a Hitler moustache. I don't know what I have to do in order to get cancelled.
Richard, you already are a straight white man. You can't fall any further. That's why.
Matthew, you're quite outspoken. You must have got in trouble.
I think, you know, in my early days, I would have been cancelled on about an hourly basis. But I think I'm protected now by two things. One is my total irrelevance. And the other one is that late at night, after the third whiskey, when I'm on the verge of crazy one flew over the cuckoo's nest style tweeting, I have a special lockbox that holds the phone until morning. Otherwise, I wouldn't be cancelled. I'd probably be stoned, you know, in a biblical manner.
Well, let's risk our peace of mind and our professional futures by playing Heresy. On this show, we argue against received wisdom, disagreeing with our audience for the sake of it, just to show that we are not numbers, we are free men. First, we're going to talk about a possible change to our eating habits.
Who invited the ants to the picnic? Five hungry ants. They marched into the salad. They marched into the cake. They marched into the pepper. Uh-oh, that was a mistake.
Ants. It's being suggested quite widely now that humans need to eat more of them. Not just ants, all sorts of insects. Could we be looking at a future where people gather to share a giant spider for Christmas lunch? On the plus side, everyone gets a leg. 80% of our live audience in the theatre tonight agree with the statement, "I hope insects don't replace meat as the bulk of our diet." Phil Wang, I know you're a gourmet. What do you say to this?
I say bring it on. I love eating bugs. I've eaten a lot of insects. I think it's a very good diet. It's a very efficient diet in an age where we're always trying to improve our efficiency. No other diet doubles as pest control. You can have a lovely protein-rich snack and clean the house at the same time. I've eaten centipedes. I've eaten a spider in China, a tarantula, but that's only because I previously swallowed a fly that I needed to, I needed to get out of me. I ate cockroaches in China. Oh, well, grow up. The earth is dying. You're going to have to get used to this. And just feast on bugs for the sake of our planet.
Matthew, you were a restaurant critic in your time. You're an adventurous eater.
I mean, I'm sure most of the people here have been to one of those 97-course, six-and-a-half-week tasting menu meals. You're not savages, are you? And some guy from Copenhagen who was supposed to run the best restaurant in the world at the time came to London, and I think the meal started with a jar of green ants. And they taste of lemongrass, before you ask.
Wait, live?
Oh, complete. Well, not for long. But they started out in the finest of health. I think all you need to know about this, the kind of disparity between eating meat products and insect life forms, is that when she was on I'm a Celebrity, Nadine Dorries polished off her kangaroo anus with such relish that she looked like she wanted seconds. She couldn't get anywhere near the portion of cockroaches. So, and the next thing is she's trying to shut down the BBC unilaterally. So that, you know, clearly eating insects over meat makes you a better person.
Richard, you'd be pleased to find a fly in your soup?
Yeah, I think we should eat insects, give them a taste of their own medicine. They're constantly trying to eat me. I think we should only eat things that are trying to eat us. Cows aren't trying to eat us. We shouldn't eat cows. Pigs aren't trying to eat us. Tigers are trying to eat us. We should eat tigers.
This wording, I hope insects don't replace meat, was the wording of a survey that was done by the Food Standards Agency earlier this year. 60% of people would try plant-based proteins. 34% would try lab-grown meat. Only 26% would try edible insects.
What about if you locked them in a room with no other food for 3 weeks?
Now there's a TV show.
I mean, it's a sort of misunderstanding. It's not actually just eating the insects, is it? They're going to be made into burgers and stuff. They're going to be sort of smashed up and you won't be able to tell the difference. So if you want to save the planet, I mean, it doesn't seem very controversial to me to say if you want to save the planet, stop eating cows that fart everywhere and eat...
Well, the alternative would be, oh, let's have a great last 10 years.
Yeah.
It could be that I'm a Celebrity is the problem, that it's people have seen people things wriggling about and you pick them up and bite them, and it's put people off the idea that you could make burgers out of this stuff.
So you're saying there should be more bugs on sort of MasterChef and fewer on I'm a Celeb. We need to up the PR game on bug eating. I'm willing to start now.
I'd happily see bugs on MasterChef. I think the only thing John Giraud would find more repellent than that is more time in the company of Greg Wallace.
I think we'd be with him on that one, wouldn't we, all of us?
On these occasions, Phil, when you were eating the insects on a sort of gastro tour, was it?
Yeah, well, there's one stall in a food market in Shenzhen, and the guy only sold critters on sticks, and he'd dust them with a bit of chili and salt. Because there's a taste to cover up, apparently. I'm not very squeamish about food. If someone's eaten it before and the guy selling them hasn't died, so I guess they're okay, I'm all for it.
Did it taste nice, or was it just interesting? I'm having a spider.
To answer the question, no, it didn't taste nice. But most things don't actually taste nice. What's nice is salt and sauce. If we think about it, like, when was the last time you ate a piece of meat that was just completely... I mean, this is Britain, completely plain might have been, but... But what we actually like is sauce and flavour. What the underlying protein is sort of... that's the second consideration, really. All we need to come up with is a good jus for grasshopper, and I think we'd all be on board.
Well, I think it's interesting that only 34% of people would try lab-grown meat. Why? If you can make it in a lab and put salt on it and it tastes the same, and save the planet doing it, why would only 34% of people go for that?
Presumably the rest want something to die for their meal.
But actually it doesn't taste the same. And I speak as someone who's just very bravely tried a McDonald's plant Big Mac. And I would rather go back to the green ants, given a choice. They'll get there in the end. It will be, you know, indistinguishable. But I think Richard's right. I think, you know, these animals have sacrificed something, and that gives it added meaning.
Yes. That's what I said.
I think we should go to the audience and find out why they don't want to eat insects. Carol Williams, you don't want to eat insects instead of meat. Why not?
Well, I don't want to eat meat either. So why should I not want to eat meat and then eat other meat?
So, are you vegetarian?
More or less. I'm trying.
So you do eat meat?
Just a little bit.
Right,
just a little
okay.
bit.
Do you have some animals that you will and some you won't?
Yeah, I won't eat little lambs now. I used to. I used to love lamb with mint sauce, but no, I won't eat them now.
So what's the age cut off if it's a four-year-old chicken?
A little bit of chicken, you know, covered in sauce, as was said. It's the sauce that matters.
But then I'm interested, if you won't eat lamb, and I understand that because it's just too cute, I'm interested that you can feel the same way about a bee.
I think a mosquito, I wouldn't mind them dying.
Oh, great.
Because they do eat a lot of you.
Malaria for pudding.
But I wouldn't eat them, no.
Well, mosquitoes are most likely to have blood from another animal in it. So actually you're having...
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you have a bit of a surf and turf situation going on.
Thank you very much. One more person. Deepa Basker, have you ever eaten insects?
No, but I was offered to once, and I turned it down.
What insect was that?
I can't remember exactly, but I think it was like a mix. It was like a big box, like a selection box.
like a pick and mix.
It came with a little chart, like Black Magic. You can identify your insect of choice.
So I think there was like crickets, ants, I want to say like grasshoppers as well. The context of this is I studied GCSE food tech, and we were learning about like proteins and various other like foodstuffs. And my teacher had like a box of various insects, and she's like, insects have got loads of protein and they're really high in protein, they're good for you. And I was quite surprised as to how many people actually did it. But I think they only did it because the crickets had chocolate on the top.
Do you think it was better or worse than the normal school lunches?
Our school was all right with the food, but I do know other schools that were shocking food in the canteen, so maybe better.
Did the school know one of their teachers was making the students eat bugs?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Yeah,
I
she think... doesn't work there anymore.
Thank you, audience, for joining in. Next, look what we're all doing again.
What an atmosphere. I love a party with a happy atmosphere. So let me take you there. And you and I'll be dancing in the cool night air. Oh, 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 what an atmosphere.
Oh, it's great to be going to parties again. Or, as Boris Johnson would put it, it's great to be carrying on going to parties. We're so keen not to miss out, a new American custom has taken hold, and 73% of our live audience believe it's helpful to send a save-the-date card before social occasions. Matthew, what do you say?
First of all, I've never had one. I've been asked to parties since the Titanic went down anyway, but I don't understand this. What's the difference between a save-the-date card and an invitation? That's my first confusion here. But really, I think this is a repellent practice. I mean, obviously, we all love moulding ourselves into not even quite the 51st state of the Union, some kind of Western European Guam dependency, so we have to do everything these lunatics do. But... this isn't, I mean, this is basically hostage taking, isn't it? The only possible reason you send a note saying, save the date, you know, 9 months' time or something, is that you're just trying to make it as difficult as possible for the recipient to find an excuse. Because you can't say in January, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, My uncle's scheduled to die in New Zealand that month. I really, if I ever got one of them, I would send whack a stick the date up your ass card, because this is a kind of social terrorism and it cannot be tolerated.
Richard, what do you think of these cards?
No, I do agree. I think it's a trick to try and get you to do something, and so you then need to up the ante a bit with your ways to get out of it. Last year I had cancer, which was great because you could get out of everything. You just have to say, sorry, I've got cancer. So that defeats the save the date. I'm all right now.
Oh, bad luck. Bad luck. Ruined it. Ruined it.
But it was brilliant. I lost a testicle, but it was a small price to pay.
That reminds me, Richard, you haven't got back to me about my party next year.
It is so long since I went to a party. I'm hoping the gentleman will still want to sign my dance card. The audience tonight have expressed in a different vote that they are very happy that socialising is starting again, that we're seeing each other face to face. What do you think about that, Phil? Are you happy to be socialising in general, parties and so on?
Oh, of course not. For the sake of the format of the show, of course not. It's appalling. Yes, of course, we need human interaction, but not this much. Before the pandemic, we did it too much. During the pandemic, we did it too little. I think the main lesson for us to glean from the last couple of years is that the real Goldilocks point is somewhere between the two, right? We did realize in lockdown that we missed other people, but only after a month of absolute bliss.
I don't think Phil's giving way to his inner misanthrope enough here. It sounds like I wasn't totally convinced, but I am genuinely a misanthrope who everyone hates. So even those few people, you know, who invite me out of pity, I was blissfully happy to be able, you know, to be locked down. And this is a disaster. And I think I might, you know, I don't want to make light of Richard's illness, but a little seminoma is absolutely perfect way out of it, you know? Quick orchidectomy, and you're away. But yeah, as you say, you can't keep it up forever.
No. There's only two of them, that's the point. You can do it twice.
Did you hurry into socialising? Did you?
No, I mean, seriously, it was sort of bliss for me. I'm a mid-50s now. Those days are behind me. I've got two young kids, so I don't go out very much anyway. For a lot of lockdown, I couldn't really tell the difference between that and my normal life, I have to say. So it wasn't a big loss for me. But yeah, I don't really want to go out if I can help it. So,
well, pray God there's a new variant along soon.
Yeah, exactly. And then the way things are going, there definitely will be. So that's the only...
Or a nuclear war, that should do it.
Yeah.
Let's see what the audience have to say. Martin Bolt, you think it is helpful to send a save the date card. Why do you think that's helpful?
Well, when you get to my age, it's nice to be invited, but you're going to forget if you don't. So if you get a card, you can put it in the calendar, then later on you wonder, well, what did I put that there for?
But are you ever invited to something you don't want to go to?
Yes, somebody asked me to come here tonight. Is that going to get edited?
Wait, it's the trailer. And what about hosting? Are you planning to throw any parties yourself now it's allowed again?
No, I come from Yorkshire. I'm not going to spend any money.
Back on the cancellation front, then.
You're cruel. Inspirational, Martin. I think this is rather brilliant. Thank you very much. Clive Smith, how happy are you to be socialising again after lockdown?
Well, I'm in my 70s, and over the years, all this socialising has built up gradually. And now we've got to the stage that we've just got a complete forest of invitations again.
You don't have that problem, Matthew, do you?
I don't even have a little thicket of invitations. I don't want to sound self-pitying, but The year before last, I got two Christmas cards, one from the Nepalese people at the takeaway and one from the dustman looking for their bonus. And this year, I think it was down to the dustman. So I wouldn't say I'm struggling to open the front door for the weight of... No, but I mean, I think Clive is obviously the most popular man in England. I'd like to send you a card asking you to a party in 2029, Clive. If you can save the date.
I think it's just out of pity, really, but, no...
That's how he does it.
Yeah.
I think that's enough on parties. I can't wait to kickstart my real social life, though. It'd be lovely to just finally put that pampas grass back outside the door. Finally tonight, we're going to talk about a different sort of group activity and celebrate what we can get done when we work collectively.
We set up a committee to discuss and interact.
Then authorise a study to investigate the facts.
Then summarise the data
to find out what we have to do.
Get out all the files, we have work to do. And then we'll take a survey
to get the public point of view.
With colour charts,
trajectory curves,
demographics too.
52% of our live audience believe you don't get good creative ideas out of a committee. That's interesting, that's quite low. It's more than half, but it's quite low. But this is an absolute truism that you don't get good ideas out of a committee. Richard Herring, what do you think?
Well, I've got to argue that you do get good ideas out of a committee, which is going to stick in my throat a little bit. The last writing project I was on that was done by committee was like a sitcom written by lots of people that has gone on to be very successful, but I was also sacked from it and they didn't like my script. So that maybe proves why it's a good idea, because they've got an award-winning sitcom and they worked out who the weak element in the room was.
Phil Wang, what do you think of committees and group planning?
Oh, I love it. It's my favourite thing. Love to be in a committee, love to talk to a committee. I think committees are great. Too often a decision is made too quickly and too well. And and what we need is to slow everything down and just think about this for a second. Yeah? Because no man is an island, and every committee is a peninsula. What do you think?
Good.
What do you think, Matthew? You work on newspapers. You ever been to the newspaper morning conference?
Once, I think, and that sated me for the next 20 years. Yeah, it's just lots of people sitting around pretending they're in a cabinet, you know, deciding whether to move the crossword down the page or whatever. I am genuinely an admirer of the committee, because it does stop things happening. Most of the time, it's better that nothing happens, that whatever has been suggested does happen. And I'm not getting the impression that there's a lot of committee stuff going on in the Kremlin right now. And it might be quite good if there were people there, with, you know. And I think, you know, I mean, God, you know, God created the world without a committee. Now, if he'd had a committee of gods, someone would have said, look, I just don't think it's a great idea to put all that uranium in that country, because, you know... So this poor sod does it in 7 days. Committee, nothing, almost nothing would have happened. It would have been much better. So I've never been on a committee. I did once, for satirical reasons, I should add, I did once ring the Ku Klux Klan were going through one of their periodic image, you know, trying to rebrand themselves. And I rang the head guy, I can't remember who he was, somewhere civilised like Kentucky or whatever. And I said, I hope you don't mind, but I'm very keen to get involved. And I'd like your permission to start the Jewish United Kingdom branch committee for the Ku Klux Klan. And that was my, and that didn't go well. And that's my own experience of wanting to be involved in a committee. But I would like more committees to stop anything happening.
What about you, Phil? You ever been on a committee?
At university, I think I was on a committee for a comedy society, and I learned many skills, like listening to people. Well, I mean, nodding. Whilst going over my own ideas again in my head.
In comedy, it's always said that American comedy is so much better because they have great big rooms of writers together. Do you not think that makes better comedy?
Yeah, of course. I'm pro-committee, as we've established. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, man. And that's why they can churn out, what is it, 2,600 episodes a series. They can make so many episodes per series of a sitcom that I physically cannot finish them. And that is when you know it's quality television.
What about you, Richard? You must have been on a committee at some point.
Not very much. I've been once on a panel that decided who was going to win an entertainment award that year. Ugh. And I think it's, you know, but it's weird because just the stronger person in the room just makes the decision and then persuades everybody else to do it. And also, like, about half the people in the committee were really stupid and wanted to choose the wrong thing.
What I'm finding interesting about this is that he's perfectly clear that nobody on the stage thinks committees are good, and the audience rather does. So, because it's only 52%, even though it's such a kind of cliched thing that everyone...
Yeah, but the other 48% are still conferring, so we need to...
Right. Where is Joe Christie? Where are you, Joe? You don't think committees come up with good ideas. Do you have any experience of that?
Yeah. I think, was it Richard who said that it's often the person with the loudest voice who gets their own way?
What committees are you on?
Yeah, currently it's one for a chamber choir, and that's actually really very well run with a lot of lovely people.
Let me ask you this, Joe. Yeah. Who is the person with the loudest voice, and I want a name?
Oh, that's... I think everyone's probably quite equal. I wouldn't like to say really. Thank you.
You said you'd been on a few committees. If committees are so awful, why do you keep being on them?
I think of it as a challenge.
I don't think our panel has convinced me that they're so massively in favour of committees. I think they're not trying. So I'm going to look for somebody in the audience who disagrees with the wisdom. Hella Christiansen. You disagree. You think you'd get good ideas out of a committee. What's your evidence?
I think if you come together, you can bounce ideas. It might trigger in your head something that you hadn't thought about.
I'm guessing Hella comes from a developed country, maybe Sweden or Denmark.
This is
the United Denmark. Kingdom, you know. It's a different world.
Most of my committee experience is actually from here, and I've seen it work very well. Possibly until the point where things need to move forward.
So what committees have you been on?
I've worked for a local authority for quite a number of years.
I think we'll draw a veil over that.
I think so.
Thank you very much. Let's all be more open-minded about committees. Hooray for the collective. Just think how much better Picasso's works would have been if he'd had a few other people around to point out that he'd drawn both eyes on the same side of the face. Where would I be without the committee meetings of my local neighbourhood watch? Well, for a start, I'd still be on speaking terms with my neighbours. Thanks so much to tonight's committee, Richard Herring, Matthew Norman and Phil Wang. Good night.
Heresy is written, presented and produced by Victoria Corrin-Mitchell, with additional material from Dan Gaster and Charlie Skelton. The series was created by David Baddiel and is an Avalon production for BBC Radio 4.
It's been a summer of spectacular concerts from the BBC Proms, with stunning performances and unique collaborations. Culminating in the world's biggest classical music party. Listen to every prom on BBC Sounds.